heading into another winter without a good definition of known icing. I'm Paul Plagg, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, which you can get on the web, and also of Bob Miller Flight Training Incorporated in the Buffalo, New York area. We get together with Bob to talk safety issues each Monday and try to provoke some thought on your part. Bob, thanks for taking some time out for our listeners today.
As always, it's my pleasure, Paul.
Bob, you wrote in your most recent edition of Over the Airwaves, the October edition, about the icing debate. And it's kind of amazing to me that this thing still lingers at the FAA, and that is coming up with an actual definition of known icing conditions. Is there still kind of a gray area here we have to deal with?
Well, there is a gray area, and I think that's going to last for a long time, but we do have some news. On September 22nd, the FAA, at the prodding of AOPA, finally rescinded a letter that they had sent to me back in June of 2006 regarding the definition of known icing. And this letter had been in place and still in force while a second attempt by the FAA through a notice of proposed rulemaking to get a refined or revised definition of known icing through. But anyway, on September 22nd, the AOPA finally got FAA to rescind this letter that, again, was really threw a monkey wrench into the whole deal about known icing when the FAA attempted to say that areas of high relative humidity combined with temperature near freezing would constitute known icing. They did finally rescind that letter, and now we're still waiting, and they promise another couple of weeks before we'll have a better definition of known icing. But from a practical standpoint, my take in this is they'll never be able to define known icing because it defies definition. It's like saying, what is turbulence, or What are conditions that might lead to running into a mountain in low IFR conditions? You know, what is dangerous, what is not?
Well, do you think they're going to attempt to define it in terms of flying into clouds with a temperature below freezing?
Well, that is the original interpretation, according to some, that if the temperatures are below 32 degrees in the clouds, that's known ice. Well, that very simply is not the case. I would judge, based upon my own flying experiences, that less than half of all sub-freezing clouds actually produce icing on the airframe. It takes more than just temperatures. We have to have water droplet sizes of a certain size in terms of microns. We have to have some disturbances other than just the airplane that create the conditions for icing. And we know that icing clouds below 22 to 25 degrees Celsius simply do not produce icing on the airframe. So to say that all clouds below 32 degrees constitutes known icing is simply is like saying that all turbulent clouds produces thunderstorms. That's clearly not the case.
What do you think will ultimately happen here? Will technology find us a way out of this debate?
I don't think so. I think that the FAA, in attempting to define known ice, they were smart enough trying not to define what constitutes the kind of turbulence that produces thunderstorms or the kind of low IFR that causes to fly into mountains. I mean, these are risks, flight risks. Subfreezing clouds are a flight risk, just as turbulent air is a flight risk. But to try and make a rule that's saying that we can't go in these conditions from a practical standpoint is just not doable. Up here in the east, in the north, particularly around the Great Lakes, we would shut down all instrument flight, most of it in GA aircraft, from November to April if we made that ruling.
All right, you do have a couple of tips, though, for pilots who are going to fly in areas where icing might be a threat. You asked the rhetorical question, okay, so what do I do if I begin to accumulate airframe icing? And you have a fairly stock answer to that that's the same as your answer to a lot of other possible hazards.
Sure. If you're in an airplane picking up ice, you report to ATC in all cases. Issue a pilot report that I'm beginning to accumulate ice. Don't worry whether ATC is going to blow you into the FAA. They are not. That's a simple fact of life. Now, the other fact is ATC is going to say, after you report in icing conditions, they're going to say intentions. And by golly, you better have an intention, and that's the back door. So if you're in icing conditions, you should know where warmer temperatures exist, or you should know where VFR conditions exist. If you're in known icing, or if you accumulate ice and do not know or cannot get to warmer air or VFR conditions, then shame on us. That's tantamount to walking into a burning building without a back door. Many times I've been caught in icing conditions in non-known ice certified airplanes with students training. But I always have, and I have always been able to get to non-icing conditions almost instantly, either by going down into VFR conditions below, or descending into warmer air, or climbing into warmer air and vacating the icing conditions immediately. It's when we do not have a back door, that's when we allow ourselves to do something that really is careless and reckless, in my opinion. Go into those cold clouds. Don't worry, as long as you know where you can go if you find icing on your airplane.
Well, speaking of experience with actual hard IFR conditions in your part of the country, we want you to tell a story after we come back from the break about one of your trips with students into the five New York airports, if you'll do that in a minute.
Okay, fine.
My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from AeroNews.
Do you feel stimulated? Hey, that's why Congress passed the Economic Stimulus Act of 2008, so loyal Americans like yourself would feel stimulated to help rev up the economy by spending money on important stuff like new Garmin avionics. We're talking potential tax incentives, bonus depreciation up to 50% in first-year cost allowances for qualified business use equipment purchases. See your tax advisor for guidance and your Garmin dealer for one whale of a stimulus package. It's almost like your patriotic duty, huh? Garmin, follow the leader.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the AeroNews special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller, talking safety, and today we want to talk about, Bob, one of the trips you made recently with a student from the Southeast United States, where a lot of times hard IFR is hard to come by much of the year, and where it may be even harder to find a flight school in that region that is enthusiastic about training in actual instrument conditions. You have invited people from all over the country, and a lot of people have taken you up on it, to come to the Buffalo area with their airplanes, and you'll take them into the five New York City airports in a single day to get used to the procedures involved and the conditions that often exist in your part of the country. You had one in particular that stood out recently. Tell us about it.
Well, I'd be happy to, and let me preface my comments. My student in this case said, as we boarded the airplane for the trip, he says, "Gee, Bob, I hope I do not become the subject of one of your podcasts." And I promised him if he was, I wasn't going to mention any names. And, of course, he is going to be in the podcast, and to my promise, I certainly will not mention his name. But let me say, he flew that flight admirably. He did a superb job in a particularly challenging flight that took place just a couple of days ago. The weather was IFR almost to the surface. We had about a 400-foot ceiling when we took off. Flew out of Buffalo straight into LaGuardia, and it was IMC the whole way right down to a 400-foot ceiling at LaGuardia. We landed there routinely, not a problem. We had a bite to eat and then came back out and checked with clearance delivery, picked up our clearance over to Kennedy. And then getting in the airplane, ground control at LaGuardia said that there was a one-hour delay going into Kennedy because of inbound traffic due to the weather. So we said, all right, we could either wait on the ground or we could file Plan B. And so I called flight service and filed a plan to a neighboring satellite airport on Long Island out in Farmingdale, and we took off and we got cleared for that immediately. And en route to Farmingdale, I called ATC and asked for a destination change to Kennedy, just hoping that maybe they could slip us in. The answer was no, we couldn't go over to Kennedy, and they said, well, what do you want to do? And we said, how is Newark? They said, we can get you into Newark. So we turned around. Again, we're in IMC conditions. Turned around, headed over for Newark, and set up for the approaches over at Newark after listening to the ATIS. And as we're about, maybe 15 minutes from Newark, ATC, LaGuardia Approach, comes back and says, we can get you into Kennedy now. All right, so we dialed in the Kennedy ATIS, set up for the approach over to Kennedy, and en route to Kennedy, they handed us off to the Kennedy approach controller. And he said, aren't you guys going to Newark? And we said, no, we were re-cleared to Kennedy. And he said, by whom? And I said, by Newark, or by LaGuardia Approach. And he says, well, Kennedy's closed. You can't come in here. Fly heading such and such out to the Coles Neck VOR and hold. So we went out there and held. And we said, now, he called us back. He says, what do you guys want to do? And we says, well, how about Newark? And he says, we can get you into Newark. So we listened to the Newark ATIS again, picked up our the approach plates, headed over to Newark. When the guy called me back and he says, Newark's now closed. Say intentions. We said, how about Kennedy? He says, I told you once before, Kennedy, we have 100 inbounds, and they're all in holding patterns. Kennedy's out of the question. We can get you into Teterboro if you want. So we said, okay, and we listened to the ATIS at Teterboro, headed over there, and he called back, and he said, we can get you into Newark now. And so this was an excellent example of cockpit resource management, you know, CRM. He was flying the airplane, and I was doing my dead level best to keep, you know, attuned to the ATIS's and pulling the approach plates. And my guy made a wonderful ILS approach into Newark, and we landed there, and we both just kind of slumped in the chair. We had been in the air almost 5.5 hours by now, flying back and forth across the New York City skies, again in solid IMC conditions.
Uh-huh.
And I want to tell you, I mean, if you think IFR flying is a challenge, do it from, you know, one very busy airport to the next busy airport when conditions are rapidly changing. You really have to be on your game. And I want to say we did the entire trip without using the autopilot once. But it was an excellent example of, you know, close coordination. We're total strangers. I had just met him earlier in the day. And the shining glory of the whole thing came as we were going into Newark. The controller said, call the following telephone number when you get on the ground.
Uh-oh.
And that's what I said, uh-oh. And usually this means that we did something wrong. But for the life of me, I couldn't think of anything we had done wrong. So on the ground, I called, and it turned out to be the TRACON, the New York TRACON manager's office, and he was anxiously waiting to hear from me. And he said, tell me about your day. And I said, well, I related what I just related to you. And he said, we're concerned about your clearance into Kennedy, which apparently was not received by Kennedy. And I said, listen to the tape. It was on 120.4, the LaGuardia departure controller cleared us over there.
Mm-hmm.
He says, that's okay. He says, that's what I thought. We just wanted to hear your side of the story. And I said, hey, did we do something wrong? He says, no, we did everything absolutely fine. The problem was on our end. Mm-hmm. We just wanted to check with you to see where it went. But again, there is just no room for inadequacy when flying in these busy Class B airspaces, particularly in IMC conditions. That's when the airspace gets very busy, air traffic controllers get very busy, we have lots of airplanes in holds, and the only way to become proficient in conditions like that is to get with an experienced pilot or instructor and go out there and practice them until you do become proficient. My student said, you know, my hometown airport, I thought that was a busy airport, but compared to what I experienced today, it was just like a walk in the park at those airports.
Well, and you're gonna have at least one guy talking you up in the southeast who says, man, them Yankees can fly.
But he came back, and he told me he came back a much better pilot, and he did. He was a good pilot to begin with. And I commend people like this individual for, you know, taking the initiative. He took an entire week off from work. A busy medical practice to come up here, to spend some time getting here, to go through the training, to get some time going back, and as I said, he's a much better pilot for it.
Well, and Bob, this is interesting too. How long had he been a pilot? What would you guess his total hours were, and how many of those were in actual IMC?
Oh, well, he told me his total hours were about 300, and he had a total of 3 or 4 hours in actual IMC conditions.
Wow.
Instrument-rated pilot. But, I mean, you can't fault him. He said, you know, down in the deep south there, we just don't get a lot of IFR days. And when we do, you know, they're pretty stormy and we can't fly in them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no weather quite like what we have up here around the Great Lakes, we get lots of low stratus, very calm, very smooth, but just solid IMC right down to the surface. And folks that receive their instrument training under the hood or in a simulator, you know, really, they're inviting disaster if they get into this kind of weather without real experience in this weather from an instructional perspective.
Well, if someone wants to get that instruction in real weather, what's the best way for them to find Bob Miller Flight Training on the web?
Well, they can go to our website, overtheairwaves.com or bobmillerflighttraining.com. We have an individual coming in two days from now from Oregon, or from the west, from your former area of the mm-hmm. country, and he says, the only reason I'm coming to you, Bob, is I want to do my instrument training in real IMC weather, consistent IMC weather. And again, here's an individual who's flying his airplane all the way across the United States to get this kind of training. If I wanted to get mountain training, genuine mountain training, I would go up and see my friend Don Lee up in Alaska. I'd come out to the Rocky Mountain area and Utah and fly with the experts there. But find the kind of training you need, find the experts in that particular field, and then just go ahead and pursue it. It's available.
And this is not an exclusive feature of Bob Miller Flight Training. As you pointed out before we started this interview, you could call any flight school in a heavy VFR area or around busy airspace and approach them about doing the same kind of flying.
Absolutely. We have no lock on New York City flying. All the flight schools that ring the New York City area, those guys flying that stuff all the time. Pick one out of the phone book. Get some references. Go over and see them and say, hey, I'd like to spend a day landing and taking off at the big New York City airports. I'm sure they'll get that kind of training. They don't have to come to us. We just happen to promote it, but others do it as well.
Well, Bob, as always, it's fun to talk to you about these things, and we'll catch you again next Monday.
Okay, Paul, thanks.
You can find Bob Miller's writings and more about Bob Miller Flight Training Incorporated at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.